Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Judy, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the Visiting Monk Program. Welcome, Judy.
Hello, Jen.
Hey. So pretty newly back from a month at the monastery.
That's right. It's just been 11 days, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can tell us what you've seen so far. I'm sure it'll continue to ripple out, but about the impact that participating in the Visiting Monk Program has had for you.
Yeah, it's been amazing. You know, actually, this is the fourth monastery that I've lived at for at least a month, usually longer. And I think what set it apart so much was, and we talk about this all the time, was the privileged environment. You know, at the other monasteries, even when they were supposedly silent, there was always a lot of drama and gossip and complaints and all kinds of things. And this time, there was a lot of drama and complaints, but it was all in my own head. And so I had a whole month to study it, which was great.
I just have to underline that to you. I am positive that anyone who has spent any length of time in the privileged environment is just laughing right now. Knowing exactly what you're talking about.
And the thing, one of the things that was so great was that I have a particular piece of karma that's just haunted me for decades. I mean, I've just been working on it really for decades. And, of course, it showed up, you know, like within 3 minutes of when I arrived, you know. And you and I actually had a chat about it early on. And you, what I heard you say was, oh, how great. This is the perfect place for that karma to come up so you can look at it and transcend it. And that's exactly what happened.
Just
exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been decades, Jen. I mean, I have goosebumps as I talk about it.
Me too. That was almost had to sit down on the floor there with that one.
Just miraculous.
That is miraculous. Maybe you could say a little bit more about that, kind of how that worked.
The default has always been, as far as I can remember, you know, something's wrong with me, of course, but it took the flavor of shame and sadness. No matter what happened, boom, shame and sadness, just right there. Automatic. And, you know, by the end, my 30-day retreat there was the opposite of that, to live a life of joyful ease. And that's what transpired. That's what took over. And I don't even see the shame and sadness anymore. It goes so quickly to the joyful ease. Boom.
I mean, that is the biggest of all possible commercials for the quality of our life determined by, right?
Yes,
because
that's
what you're describing, is that, you know, habitually, for each of us, there are these really deep karmic grooves that the attention just goes there, it goes there, it goes there. And after a while, it can feel like, I mean, what's the point? I can't make any difference with this. But to bring with you the brilliance of, you know, for those 30 days, people are invited to set an intention, a practice intention. It sounds like for you it was joyful ease. And that gave you a place to practice putting your attention that was an alternative to that karmic groove.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And because I had the privileged environment and no distractions, you know, my commitment was to record about that at least 3 times a day. So that reinforced the looking for it, you know, the looking, where's the joy, where's the joy? That question was just kind of my mantra. And and it just established the new groove that's held me since I've been home all 11 days.
Wow. And, you know, with that recording and listening, you've got a fighting chance at continuing to practice that. Because, you know, really before recording and listening, our choices were be in practice, like basically at the monastery or some other retreat, or struggle. You know, those were kind of the two choices. But now with all the technology, all the ways we can stay plugged in, there really is an opportunity to continue the practice that we start when we're in a more concentrated practice environment. We can actually sustain that.
That's what's happened. You know, I tried 4 monasteries before I found this, you know, or 3 other monasteries. You know, conditioning really had its grip on me, that I was I was beyond, you know, conditioning told me I was just beyond any kind of happy life. It just wasn't possible. And here it is.
Wow. And you know what I really appreciate about what you're saying is, because I know you have established practice even in this practice well before you came for that Mozang retreat, But that it sounds like what you're pointing at is, you know, yes, we have all of the far-flung opportunities. Yes, we have recording and listening, but there's something about immersing oneself in the environment for even an extended period of time that has a unique place in practice for us.
And I knew I needed the immersion. I knew that with all the tools and resources we have, that this karmic pattern was just had me gripped, and I needed the immersion and the no distractions. I mean, there wasn't anything else to do except study this, and the schedule held me and gave me lots of opportunities to study it.
Yeah, boy, that's such a great point, because, you know, ego is going to talk us into everything else is more important. That, you know, okay, yeah, I see what I need to work on, and I will do that, but let me just do the laundry, right? Let me just get the kids. Mm-hmm. Let me just. But in the nesting environment, we're cornered, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here to do.
That's right. And the other thing I saw was that in any given task that I was invited to do, there was usually grumbling. But when I went to my experience, which was Where's the Joy?, it was always lovely. It was always lovely. So that was another lesson. I mean, I've heard that forever, you know, go to the experience, don't go to conditioning. But to have 30 days of immersion where that happened over and over again shifted some brain waves somehow.
Yeah. Well, as you were talking earlier, it reminded me of learning a language. You know, so if you want to learn the language, there's a lot of ways to do it. You know, you can take this little course or that thing, or, you know, you can listen to this or go online and do that. But if you really want to learn the language, you're going to go to the country, you know, and you're going to surround yourself with it. And that's essentially what you decided to do.
Right. And not only the culture of the privileged environment, but also the other monks, because I was just so inspired day in and day out to watch everybody else there being so committed and so so committed to this practice and to looking for what works. And they talked about it over and over, and I can do that. You know, I can do that. I did that. I'm doing that. You know, it was just great.
And then you get to bring that into your everyday life, because that process that you just talked about of, you know, so there would be grumbling in the working meditation, which, you know, it's such good news, right, that everything that tortures us, that we suffer with, comes with us to the monastery. Great. You know, that comes up. So the grumbling comes up. Then you have the practice of turning to the joyful ease. There it is. You see through conditioning's lie. So then it's like, well, then it's probably lying to me at home, too.
That's right. And I could bring the schedule home. So just as you suggested, or I heard you suggest, you know, I put all my tasks in a little basket, you know, and I pick it out during my little work periods, and that's what I do, just like at the monastery. This is your assignment. And, okay, great. Where's the joy? Well, I don't feel like, oh, nope, no choice here. Where's the joy?
Yep. Sorry, that's what's on the card. That's what we've got.
That's right. Yep. I mean, there was no negotiating with you or anybody else at the monastery. That was the task, and that's what I did. You know, that was my commitment. So there wasn't any negotiation around it. You know, that was what I did. So I brought that home.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Wow. You know, because conditioning wants to think that structures, boy, they really cramp my style, right? They get in the way of, then I won't be able to X, Y, Z. But what we find out is that the structures of practice give us so much freedom.
Mm-hmm.
They really expand what's possible for us.
Yeah. It just quiets conditioning. I mean, it's like conditioning evaporates because it's just ignored over and over again. It's just ignored, so it kind of gives up.
Right. And it does both things, doesn't it? I mean, you said earlier on the thing about all the what's normally happened in other situations for you, where you see the gossip and the blah, blah, blah happening externally, it was all happening inside your own head. So often people will come and find that all of that feels like the volume gets turned up at first. Mm-hmm. And then as we begin to learn to be able to turn our attention away from it, exactly as you say, it doesn't have the fuel to keep going in the way that it does when we're constantly feeding it.
Right. And the other thing that has carried through is that, you know, whenever I was invited to do a task, it was always completely demonstrated to me, and I was invited to ask any questions. And then it seemed to me that I was left on my own, as though you all believed that I was completely adequate to do the task, and that if I had any questions, I would ask. So yeah. There was, you know, that kind of adequacy is, you know, now when I get home and, you know, there's a computer problem or something, there's, oh, no, I can do this. Let me just breathe and do this. And that's what happens. I can figure this out. I can do this. And if I can't, I know how to ask. I know how to write a note. You know, I know how to ask for help.
Oh, that's very good. Boy, there could be a whole book written here, couldn't there, about the monastic principles in one non-monastic life.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, because you're basically what you're doing is the, you know, that wisdom that you were seeing, that you were projecting all around you at the monastery, all the supports, it's really stayed with you, and it sounds like it's informing, you know, the way you're living now, even though there aren't the actual external structures, those structures are staying with you.
Yeah, I still have the feeling, you know, well, they thought I could do it. Maybe I can.
Right.
You know, I did for a month. I could try this again. You know? And, it's sometimes a little surprising, but it works. It's worked.
Yeah.
It's working.
Oh, I love that. Gosh, there's just so much in that tree. Huh?
Yeah.
Amazing. So, believe it or not, we're already at 5 o'clock. I can't believe it. This is one of those, we could have a whole show about it.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
So anything else you wanted to add in before we close?
There's one thing. You know, I had a lot of resistance, of course, going, especially since I'd been to 3 others, and I didn't think that they had, well, you know, I'm sure they did whatever they did to get me here. But one of the things that was so helpful was I made some recordings about why I wanted to go to the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really helpful, especially on the drive there. So conditioning didn't have me turn around. I just kept listening to these recordings over and over about why I wanted to go, and I found that very supportive.
Oh, that is a great idea, because you're right. You know, the practitioner who really wants this for herself is not necessarily the one who's always going to be there.
Right.
Important to remind them, what am I doing? Why did I make this decision?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
which
helpful.
Is helpful for us in general. That's a great use of the recording practice.
Yeah.
Is, you know, when we can really, in those times where we can see clearly why we practice and what we're practicing for, to make those recordings to support ourselves for the times where it isn't so clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great
tip. Deep Gesho for making that all available to me. It was extraordinary.
Oh, you know, and Judy, deep Gesho for taking advantage of it, because as I'm sure you can imagine, just as much as folks who spend time here feel supported by being here, the entire community is so supported by the sincere and earnest practice of folks who come and do it. So it's just a giant benefit to everyone.
Great.
And thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I loved it.
Okay. Take good care, Judy. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to Sherry.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Judy. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. Don't they kind of make you want to just hop in the car and go to the monastery?
Yes. Yeah, it was a very fun conversation.
Yeah. Such a good time. And, of course, at this time of year, it is particularly wonderful to be there. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, never mind. I'm not going to say anything about what's coming up at the monastery. Never mind.
Okay.
You'll tell us when the time comes. Never mind.
Okay. Can I mention one thing about their conversation?
Oh, please.
I just loved it when Judy said, well, you know, there's something wrong with me, of course. And, you know, just to say it like that, and it's, you know, all of us who practice, you know, just instantly recognize, you know, that's the fundamental conditioning, and we know that it's not true.
Right.
It's just so great. I just loved it.
Oh. Right. To be so clear about what is the voice in the head and what is actually so. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I just love that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Great. I have announcements here, unless there's something You want to?
No. I'm excited for those announcements. Some of them, I think, actually go nicely with that previous conversation.
Oh, good. So, time is running out to sign up for the Enneagram and Relationships email class with you, Sherry. And that's starting this Friday, May 13th.
Amazing. Ooh, Friday the 13th. What an auspicious day to start something. That's good. And Mercury is still retrograde. Woo!
Oh, my goodness.
Can't wait to see how all this goes.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that until the end of today's radio show, Sherry.
Oh, that's right. Oh, dear.
And this email class will focus on how suffering is created and maintained in our most challenging relationships and how awareness can help us move toward authentic connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And to get away from the daily routine and deepen awareness practice, join Sangha for a practice weekend May 27th through 29th at the beautiful Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California.
Not to be missed at this time of year. As we know, any time of year it's great, but right now, so glorious.
Yes. And the weekend includes guidance and a practice opportunity.
Yes. And good food and hanging out with the monks and, you know, stuff like that. All the good stuff.
And Rumi's poems echo the deepest longing of our hearts. Join you, Sherry, and Ashwini in a joyful exploration of awareness practice through Rumi's lyrical poetry and practical wisdom at the Zen of Rumi Retreat, which is June 20th through 25th in Carmel, California, and only a few slots are available for this retreat.
Mm-hmm. It is true.
Yes. The foundational There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat in North Carolina, June 30th through July 7th, offers an opportunity to do the compassionate and courageous work of freeing oneself from the ravages of conditioning and self-hate. This retreat is perfect for beginners and can be repeated any number of times.
So along those lines, Michael, before you go on to the next one or whatever, I was just talking, so we were just on retreat in North Carolina, beautiful retreat, and I was talking to someone in North Carolina who'd been a visiting monk about a year ago, and was talking about how powerful that experience was, life-changing the way people often describe it. And then watching how, as time goes by, the months go by, and the clarity and the presence begins to fade a little, conditioning slides in and gets a little more of a toehold, and then pretty soon it's kind of put in the door, and then, by the time, at some point, there's sort of a, I think I'm back to the bad old days. And what we were talking about is the importance of repeating that experience as well. So whatever it is, that I promised that this was going to be something that I nagged people about regularly. But we have so many virtual practice opportunities that sometimes it can feel like, well, you know, I'm doing enough. But doing something virtual, as helpful as it may be as a support for practice, it's not the same as being on retreat. It's not the same as being there in person with Sangha doing practice together. So whether it's something like a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, we have another retreat coming up this summer. I can't remember when. Maybe you're getting ready to announce it. But the What You Practice Is What You Have retreat. And a number of people did that when it first came out a few years ago. And so repeating a retreat like that and seeing how different I am now, not me, you know, as the retreat, how different I am now as compared to then, just the depth of practice. And so, or being a visiting monk or whatever it is, but to get ourselves to Sangha in the hall, in the discussion, participating live. There's just nothing like it. So sometimes I think people look at the schedule and say, oh, there's nothing I haven't done. But that's not it. There's nothing in this practice I haven't done either. But that doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing it because of that experience of I'm different, it's different, everybody's different, it's a new time. I've seen a bunch of things. I've forgotten a bunch of things. And it's the process that's so powerful for us, the process of practicing together in person. So there's my commercial.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's just so true. I mean, anything, yeah. by definition, virtual is, it's not the real thing. It's it's the, you know, at-home version of the practice that is deepened in person.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so I've been talking with the coaches about this because there are a lot of people who do coaching but that's all they do is coaching. And coaching is meant to be a support for practice. It's not practice. Practice is getting together with other people who are practicing and participating. And then we have things like coaching that support us, all of those kinds of programs and open air or whatever it is that we can do to support us between times when we're able to be together.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. And I just got information that Rumi Retreat is closed.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, I think it's full. So it is a wonderful retreat, and I was talking with Ashwini about, because this one at Carmel is, of course, just, you know, wow, Rumi at Carmel, really? That's heaven on earth. And so I was talking with her about maybe offering another one at the monastery because it is such a great retreat, and it would be lovely to have it there as well. So we'll keep people posted on that. If you didn't get into this one, we're trying to figure out a way to have another one.
Great, great, great.
Mm-hmm.
And so for these and all other practice opportunities, the webpage is schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. In about 5 minutes, and one topic will help all of these lovely callers here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're ready, Sherry.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Sure thing. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. It's Shridevi in Philadelphia.
Well, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. I was just thinking about you today.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I was calling because I had a call with my Zen coach last night, and she encouraged me to call into the radio show. So, mm-hmm. And it just so happened today, I was listening to an archive, I think from pretty recently, where someone was having this conversation about a particular issue, and I think the feedback or the guidance you had given was, you know, when we're not at a place in our lives or something like when there are other people in our lives who can really help and guide us and give us that great encouragement, we should take them up on it. And I was like, okay, my Zen coach sent a call, and I'm going to call.
All right.
But I wanted to connect.
Good woman.
Yes, very much. For the last several months, and I've called in, I know I called in and spoke to you in December around this, and maybe one other time, I've noticed kind of this energy that's been building towards, it started off with like feeling bad and anxiety attacks, and then in the last couple of weeks has turned into kind of what feels like a really hard depression, which I think was aided a little bit by I just came out of being very sick for a couple weeks, so was just alone in a room resting for hours, just staring at the wall, which doesn't very help, unfortunately, sometimes conditioning, especially when the body is very tired. And so, but the depression has felt the hardest it's ever been for me, and it almost feels a little bit like right before I started practice. And the language has been really rough, and it's been, you know, like the why don't you just end your life has been very strong, those types of things conditioning says.
Yeah.
And where it's really getting me is around just the story about my value in the world and what I contribute. And what I was noticing about it, because it was so hard over the weekend, and then what happens is I have all this energy and it's really low energy and I don't want to feel that way. So I pick unhealthy behaviors that to distract me from the energy. And then those unhealthy behaviors, quote unquote, make me feel good for a little bit, but then they go away and I wake up and I feel bad again. And then even worse, because I get beaten up for the unhealthy behavior. But I was noticing something very interesting at work today, because when I went into work, I had all of that really deep, horrible, just like, you know, felt like I could cry any moment. And then I watched throughout the day how when I felt engaged, whether I was talking to a coworker, solving a problem, focused on a task, all of the energy in my body changed. I didn't have that feeling. I wasn't listening to a story. But then the minute that stopped, it would rush back in. And I really noticed that when I was feeling good about something, there was so much resistance showing up in my body to feeling good. Like I wasn't allowed to feel good because I had to be reminded that I was, you know, a quote-unquote worthless whatever person, or nothing was going to be, or I'm just not, you know, whatever conditioning was saying. And then what I also noticed was, so I noticed that when I was engaging in life, I felt okay. But then when I would think about going home in the evening, or what was I going to do with my time, or I noticed this especially on weekends, if I don't have anything planned for the weekend, there's so much depressive energy that shows up because of this story that I have to be productive, I have to be doing stuff. So I've just been going through a lot of these places, and it's felt the hardest I think it's ever felt recently.
Well, yes. The way you describe it, we can all relate to a really miserable time. And to me, the thing that makes it this different from anything you've ever experienced before, and I bet you'll agree with me on this, is how clear you are about all of it. How clearly you're seeing it, right? So before you started practice, I'm sure all the same thing was going on, but you didn't know it. You just knew that you were miserable and depressed. Now you can see. So we were doing a talk in Asheville the other night, and this fellow was talking about being a hedonist and how he had devoted his life to that, his young chap, and how afraid he was that if he wasn't just in a constant state of self-punishment, and we know what that was, that he would just slide into being this hedonistic, egocentric, indulgent, useless human being. And so as we talked about it, what came out is that he was so afraid of this because he had seen himself act that way. And I said, yes, so you saw yourself act that way, and what you realized is that didn't make you happy. In fact, it made you really unhappy, and you decided you didn't want to be that way any longer, and that's where you are now. So you don't want to be hedonistic and egocentric and indulgent, and it's not that you have to keep yourself from being that way. You don't want to be that way. So there's no reason for the beatings. That process that you went through was called a learning experience. That's what was actually happening. Now, I tell you that long, drawn-out story because I'm going to make the same point with you, right? That what you've just gone through has been a learning experience. So instead of, as we just talked about, you living in that place of depression, feeling bad, beatings, being called names and that sort of thing, and really having no idea what's going on. Now you've watched yourself go through it with conscious awareness.
Mm.
You described perfectly. And, of course, I hope that you will, on one of these evenings, start a process map. So that you can see for yourself how clear you are that all this stuff is going on because your attention is on the negativity, right? The conversation in conditioned mind. Then you get engaged, and what happens? Your attention moves. It's no longer on that conversation in conditioned mind. Your attention moves to your colleague, to the problem solving, to the whatever it is that you're engaged in, and you feel fine. You have lots of energy in your body. You feel great as far as we know because you're not checking in with conditioned mind to get some more negative information. Then you realize that you actually feel good. And what you see as a reaction to that from conditioning is a whole bunch of resistance because you're not allowed to feel good. Because if you feel good, the attention is not on it. That is a perfect description of how egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, takes over and controls a person's life and puts them in a world of suffering in which it is that system is sucking the life force out of the human being and leaving them depleted and depressed. You just laid it out there. So, of course, the good news about that is there's no mystery. You know how that happens. You're not feeling well, and you lie there in bed looking at the wall, and conditioned mind just has you. Now, it wouldn't need to have you because what you could be doing and what you will be doing from now on, I feel quite confident, is giving your attention to all sorts of things that inspire you, that remind you of who you are and what you like and what you appreciate. You know, you could make recordings of the contribution that you make to the world, which kind of goes against that you're a useless so-and-so who isn't doing anything to be a contribution to anything, because that's just absolutely not true. But if you're not turning your attention to what is true, then the only story that's available is that lie. Yeah. So you could be making those recordings. You could be talking about people in your life that you love, little people, big people, all the things you're grateful for, what's beautiful. You could be reading poetry to yourself. You could be making up songs about what a great person you are. You could be doing a ton of stuff. You could be drawing pictures and coloring them and just going back to being 3 or 4 years old and doing all the things you don't get to do because you're a responsible adult living a responsible adult life. Mm. You know, you could play solitaire. I mean, you could do anything that brought you to you, taking care of you, focused on you, loving you, being kind to you.
Thank you so much for that because it's so interesting that there's so much energy around I need to do something on the weekends and then the weekend comes by and I do nothing and so it starts the story because conditioning has me in. But then I come out of it and I'm like, oh God, I really wanted to start drawing again. Or I really wanted to start doing this, but then conditioning comes in and says, that's not enough. That's not valuable enough. And so just to hear that, to go like, if I just literally wanted to get construction paper and cut paper hearts all day, and that was joyful
for me,
right. And that's okay.
That's right.
That's okay.
That's right. That's because okay. Don't you have little nieces and nephews and people like that?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how old are they?
Well, I have a nephew that's 4, and funnily enough, I just bought him a art bag the other day full of construction paper, and one of the things that was helping me with the depressive energy was I just hung out with him for like 2 hours every night, and we just cut up paper. That's all we did. We just cut paper and glued things and laughed, and that was like
there you
what
go.
Was helping. Yep.
There you go. Yeah. And the thing about it is, Sridevi, it's great to do it with him.
Mm.
It's even more important to do it with her.
Yes.
Because
yes.
When you are letting that that self-hate get to you, I mean, it would be one thing if it got to you, the grown-up, professional, intelligent, accomplished woman. But you know that it is attacking a vulnerable, young,
mm-hmm.
innocent
yep.
part of you, right? It's going right
yep.
to the heart. And yeah. so in the same way that you would not let anybody do or say those things to a four-year-old, an external four-year-old, you
mm-hmm.
would also not, you will make a commitment, I know you will, to not letting that be done to her either. Because
yeah.
she is important and valuable, whether she ever performs an act that karmic conditioning would say is valuable or not. She
mm.
exists. She
mm.
is alive. That's
mm.
all she needs to do. That is her contribution. Who she is, what she is her contribution, not what ego says is valuable to it. So,
yeah.
yes, playing, singing, dancing, laughing, just enjoying life, looking at trees, birds, flowers, going for walks, whatever she would enjoy, do that. And that expression will be your best contribution to all of us. Now, I happen
mm-hmm.
to know you do great adult things, okay? and we are often the recipients of that, right? But that's not the point. Right? That's wonderful. I'm happy for it. I'm glad. I'm grateful. But that comes way, way a second to being there in the present, heart open, receiving life, and sharing from that place.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate
you
that.
You are so welcome. Let's be in touch.
Yes, very soon.
Okay, all right, good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sridevi. Take
good
care. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sridevi. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. It's great to see such courage out there, Sherry. And,
I was on a call like much like this earlier today. And someone was talking sharing in that same way, just a really difficult time. And everybody else on the call came on and said, thank you for that, because that just gives me courage. I feel the same way. This is what's going on with me. And those voices just want me to shut up and not let anybody know. But that goes back, doesn't it, to all of us getting together. And being together in a way that allows us to be really clear and honest and open about what karmic conditioning does to us, and offer one another encouragement and support for getting through that and getting to a place of clarity and loving kindness. So, it's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's just incredibly helpful to hear such authenticity and honesty and willingness, and it's just very inspiring.
Yes. Spiritual heroes. That's what we got.
Yes, spiritual heroes. A lot of them in our sangha, which is wonderful. And right now we're going to hear from our sponsor, Sherry, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right, good. Thank you, Michael.
Sure thing. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry.
Hello, who's this?
This is Claire from London.
Well, hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've called in once before in December, and so this is my second time. And while I'm thinking about it...
Welcome again.
Oh, thank you. While I'm thinking about it, can I add my voice to the other people in Britain who'd like you to come here?
To come over for a visit?
Yes, yes.
Yes, I'd love to do that. In fact, I actually keep asking about that. Yes, I would love to do that. So, okay, there's another inspiration. And I know that there are influential people listening to this conversation, people who have the ability to make things like that happen. So there, we've both given a plug for that. I would love to do that.
Great, great. Thank you. Yeah, so I called in just to, because I'd like to just share something about my experience of the Big Bamboozle. So I found that sometimes it lags, so you do one of the exercises and then the effect seems to come a week or so later. So I was doing my recording and listening, and I was doing last week's assignment, and suddenly I found that I was just finding loads of dualities coming into my head, like just describing them. So like I'm hot, I'm cold, I'm angry, I'm calm, I'm consistent, I'm inconsistent. And so I started writing them down and recording them. And so I'd do about three in a row. And then I'd say, and I love you all. And then I'd just talk about some more dualities. And it was just a really amazing feeling. It was because I noticed that that I had these beliefs that I never knew that I had, and I hadn't questioned them. And so I started writing more and more of them down. And it was just incredibly expansive, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And did it feel kind of like, this is odd language perhaps, but did it feel like you were sort of being guided? That you weren't volitionally thinking of these things, but more they were just dropping in, it was coming to you?
Yes, yes. And not all the time. So some of the time it did. And then occasionally I would then actively try and think of some, but I was always aware that conditioning might get hold of it quite easily. So yeah, I was a little bit wary of it.
Yes. Well, and it's, to me, it's just so fascinating to be in one, because that expression that we use, dropping in, and to be in one of those situations where it feels like, I'm not thinking of this. This is appearing in my head, and I'm seeing it. And then I can write it down, but I'm not generating the information. I'm receiving it and reporting it, maybe, you know, jotting it down or recording it or whatever. But it's not coming from the same place that I'm used to getting information, like for most of us, conditioned mind.
Yes. Oh, it was most of the time it was just coming to me, and I'd be doing something else and one of them would come to me and I'd write it down. And I was making sure that every three or four, I would say, and I love you all. And then there were times when I tried generating it, just to see what would happen. And even that was interesting, because I was aware that conditioning might get hold of it. So, you know, I was being careful that it didn't.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a sense that the I love you keeps the channel open, conditioning
definitely.
At bay?
Yes,
I love you
definitely.
Is a lot like, is it a crucifix for a vampire or whatever that is? It just cannot be in the room with I love you. It just can't. Can't stand it.
No.
Can't stand love.
No.
That's great.
Yeah, so it felt like I was, by saying these things aloud, it was sort of bringing up fears that I didn't know I had, but I was able to stand outside that duality and hold it.
That it didn't have power over you in
no.
the way that it would have power over you if it remained unexamined inside your head. Is that kind
no.
of what you mean?
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
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 But it also gave me distance.
Yes, yes. We disidentify from it. We step back, we look at it, and we realize, well, that doesn't, I don't need to let that have power over me. That's just an idea. That's a concept. That's a belief.
Yes. Yeah. Then the interesting thing was that some of the time, I would say something, and then I would realize that I'd always assumed that one side of that duality was bad, and the other one was good.
Uh-huh.
And then on re-examining it, I wasn't so sure which one was. I then wondered why I had thought that.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that that we get into when we start looking at things in this way is, so there's a happy and a sad that can seem like a duality. Well, they are a duality. That's why they're seen that way. So there's a happy and a sad, but there is another experience that's like happy or joy or enjoyment or something like that, that we would have to write with a capital letter, because it includes both sides of those of that smaller duality.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Yeah. So there's a pleasure and pain, which we're taught to think are is a duality that's like the, what you mentioned. One is good, pleasure. The other is bad, pain. And mm-hmm. then as we begin to explore it and step back from it, we realize there's a larger container for those. We don't have to just go back and forth between those two sides of the duality. There's something like acceptance or humanity or experience or being alive. There's a larger container.
Yes.
And when we step into that larger container, then we can see the two sides of that duality as just that, actually a continuum, right?
Yes.
That they're both on one continuum.
Yes, yes. That's the kind of experience that I was sort of glimpsing at, really. Yeah, it's like if you're on the Earth and then you go up in a spaceship and you're able to look at the whole of the Earth.
Yes, yes. And then things like up and down and left and right and east and west become very bizarre, don't they? Depending,
yes.
Because it's like those maps of the Earth that try to show us our kind of Western misguided notions of superiority, where we're on top, right? And,
yeah.
And then there's what's on the bottom. And so they just take it and turn it upside down, and suddenly, it's just a completely different perspective. And each is just as accurate as the other. We just have an assumption that we're on top and they're on the bottom.
Yep, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to question, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's fun to question.
Oh, yes, yes.
So,
it is.
Yeah, so much more fun than assuming.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, my dear. You're up in the middle of the night, aren't you?
I certainly am. Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You. And thank
right.
you, Michael.
You're
Take
welcome.
Good care. Good night.
Night night.
Thanks for joining us, Claire, in the middle of the night.
And when I go over to do a workshop with them, who knows? I might get up in the middle of the night and call into the show, too. It'd be
that
fun.
Would be fabulous. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. It's Janice.
It's who?
Janice. From Vancouver.
Oh, hello, hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine, and I found all the phone calls really helpful, and the, the good news update. I was just recalling so much.
Kind of makes you want to be a visiting monk again, doesn't it?
You're not kidding. And I'm so glad I just jumped on the Zen of Rumi retreat. As soon as I saw that it was there was registration, I did it.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good time. I'm pretty sure. I know it's going to be a good time. So
yeah.
That's great.
And if it was easy to get to the monastery for a weekend, I'd be there too.
I know the feeling. Yeah.
So when I was at the monastery back in October, I had gone just after my partner's surgery, and we knew that there'd be a diagnosis at some point, but we didn't know when. So I carried on with my plans, and then I got the information partway through, and it was more serious than was expected. And I remember consciously making the decision, because a retreat was coming up, a precepts retreat, to remain. And just, I knew, because of being a visiting monk before, just grounding myself in that atmosphere before I came home to do whatever things needed to be done.
And lest that sound cruel and heartless, he was fine with that.
That's right.
Yeah. So he knew, understood, sensed, whatever it was, the importance of that for you, as you were facing your half of what he was facing.
Mm-hmm. And I suspected that not everybody would be fine with that, but not everybody was going to be there doing the things that I needed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was important to remember.
Mm-hmm. And it felt like it did prepare you.
It absolutely prepared me, yeah. And in fact, I was able to slip away for the New Year's retreat, which I hadn't anticipated, but got somebody to stay here. And so what I wanted to acknowledge was that that whole process of not knowing, of whatever had to be done, it was an intense full-time job, as I've never had before. And we just came through all of the chemotherapy. Then there was a gap of a month before radiation began, and radiation's just finished. But in that gap, I noticed something that was alluded to before, that there was that busyness, and then there was this pause. And then I was, you know, I was kind of like, I wonder if I'm getting depressed. That job is kind of finished, and the next one hasn't quite started, and we don't know. So that was a physical kind of investigation to see where that was and how that was operating in my life.
So just so I see if I'm following you. So you're really making a push, right? It's big. It's big time. And then there's this gap, and I can only guess that you were exhausted.
Yeah, exhausted and anemic and, just completely worn out.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that is exactly, those voices started to really ramp up.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're in a weakened condition, and so that's a perfect time for them to come in and make legitimate tiredness. It's like the Sri Devi talking about being sick. You know, the body is in a weakened condition, and so the voices come in and make it something else. Right?
Yeah.
Well, it's this and it's that, and you're this and you're that, and this means this, and by the time we get finished, by the time they get finished with us, it's easy to understand somebody feeling depressed, because on top of being exhausted, it's being beaten up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes there were just, I mean, there's always all the practice tools, but just, doing all of those things, they just felt really supportive to know, like, there was going to be a reflective listening buddy call or a stop-drop text or things like that. Just like, hey, wait a minute, that just is like, oh, this is a commitment I have. And at that time,
yeah,
I'm not listening to the voices.
Yes, and so again, it's that turning the attention, isn't it? So there's something that I'm called upon to do. So earlier it was talk to a colleague or solve a problem or whatever it is. With this, it's a practice commitment, and so I can't let myself indulge attention on those voices because I've committed, I'm doing this other thing. So attention goes to that. And during that time, I realize I'm fine. And then if I let the attention go back to not being directed. It slides right back there to conditioned mind. It's pulled into those voices, that conversation, the beatings, the negativity, and pretty soon, boom, I feel depressed again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So helpful to see it as a process, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I guess it's super for me to just have so much faith and trust that what I'm believing isn't real, or what I could hear wasn't real.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That what those voices are saying isn't real. And, of course, that's where the recording and listening comes in, right? So that's not real, so I need to get my attention on what's real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a full-time job, attending to what's real.
Yeah.
You know, the truth about, in this case, the truth about you, the truth about him, the truth about the process, what you've been through, how you are, what you're looking forward to, what you've done well, and then beyond that. You know, what's happening in nature and what's happening with the people around you. And it's just on and on, the things that we can be grateful for and happy about and feel good about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say there was something when I was waiting, well, he was having his last radiation, knowing that was the last. That was the last of this whole culmination thing of treatment. As far as we know it at this time. And watching that moment and able to, you know, send metta to everybody who else was waiting, send metta to the whole place, the equipment and everything. But I was also very aware that, you know, way back when, wondering if there would be an end, then hearing that there's process and then there will be an end, and thinking I never really had to worry about like, oh, I can't wait till I get to the end. It was really like being with the unfolding. And then when it was like the end, that was happening, being very aware that that wasn't a special moment either, that was just another moment.
Big, isn't it?
Yeah, like the idea that would be, it's going to feel different in that moment. It was just like, no, it didn't feel different. And it might, in retrospect, I'll say, you know, oh, well, that I'm reviewing that moment, or I was anticipating that moment. But really, I was watching that so closely, and it was, you know, it was really true that I think like these enlightening experiences, you know, yeah, they happen, but they don't feel any different. Or I don't realize that it's really happening or something. It's just one more moment of practicing all those moments.
Yes, yes. If we don't turn it over to conditioned mind, right? Because when conditioned mind gets hold of something, that's when the suffering begins. But when we're here and present, this here now.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Deep Castro, for all of the support and practice with Sangha, virtual and in person.
Mm-hmm. It's all good, isn't it?
It's all
support. Yeah. We give it, we receive it. We give it, we receive it. It's just a beautiful wheel turning away from suffering.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Janice.
Thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Sangha.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller here.
Oh, excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Jeff calling from South Dakota.
Well, hello,
Hi.
Jeff.
Hello.
How are you this evening?
Well, I'm pretty good. I am calling to check in. I called a couple weeks ago, and yes, and my issue was feeling very stuck in a job, and one of your encouragements was that to look at what I would be willing for as far as physical and mental and emotional kind of what would I be willing to give for to that to help me get unstuck. And I'm calling to report that probably no surprise the it started with a lot of kind of energy that I felt the next couple of days, but then didn't really know what to do with it, and but then kind of voices started in, and there was there just became a lot of kind of turmoil or tumult that I could see, and I could see you know, hear different voices that like one would, they'd kind of go back and forth where they I feel stuck in this job, but one voice would just say, but you've given your heart and soul to other jobs and they didn't work out, so you're not going to do that again. Or another kind of voice would say, you should, your heart is really in religious study, and the job's not going to work out because that's where your heart is. And there were just a lot of different things. And there wasn't...
A lot of people having opinions about you and your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
An observation that they've had from looking at my life and what's gone wrong with it, and just... I don't know if it, I could just see it cycle, and then it started to affect my wife and I, who were usually get along very well, had a little bit of a misunderstanding, and that added fuel to the thought. But then it kind of broke, and I felt we cleared up the misunderstanding, and I felt like we're a little bit more on track. But it just... I'm still pretty novice at handling those voices, so I'm just calling to get any of your next homework or next advice or what you think.
So, Jeff, the thing is, the point that I was wondering if you were getting is that these voices are talking to and about you. They're not you talking. They're voices that call you and express opinions as if you're somebody else. Could you get a feel for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, you like this, that's what your heart is into, and so that this is never going to work out because, and you did this and that didn't work because it's as if it's a next-door neighbor or somebody observing you and commenting on your life.
Yes, yes.
Which is very different from a feeling of you talking in an I voice. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Because that's what I'm hoping.
And that I voice seems to be missing.
That's what I'm searching to find, is that I voice that will help me decide what direction to take. Like when you're a little kid and you already know what you like, and you're just kind of naturally attracted to it, and then you're so conditioned out of it, and then you get older, and you don't really, at least in my case, don't know what I like, just what I always should have done, or being propelled by some unconscious motive. And now, okay, all these other voices have been telling me what to do, and now I'm needing to find the one that will be the one that I can follow like a North Star.
Mm-hmm. And now I can't remember, I'm sure I asked you this question before, but I can't remember what you answered. Do you have a recording and listening practice?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, there you got your homework assignment.
Okay.
And it's a, and so let me, I don't know if you've heard me say this, but if you decide you're going to do this, be prepared that you are going to run into resistance like nothing you've ever run into before. Okay, because those voices that like to talk to you as you and tell you who you are and how you are and what you should do and what you like and what you don't like and what's going to work and what, those voices really don't want you to do a recording and listening practice. Mm-hmm. Because the recording and listening practice is going to give you the opportunity to get in touch with the heart, with authenticity, okay? And so, to begin that process, this is what I would suggest. You'll take the recorder and put it in your right hand and let that fellow who really feels distant from himself and from what he wants and how to make that happen, you know, the one who's looking for guidance and direction, just let him talk. Just let him talk. Now, this is not you voices. I'm not talking about ego voices or self-hating voices. I'm talking about the guy who held all those jobs and did all that stuff and now does this work and is really starting to feel the weight of it, so to speak, and is looking for what's going to resonate with the heart. Him. He talks, okay? And when he said everything that it seems like he has to say, and if, let him express his feelings, okay, not just an intellectual, well, I did this and that didn't, but really what does it feel like not to know and to feel like he's doing something he doesn't want to be doing, but he doesn't know what else to do and all of that. So after he talks, then you take the recorder and put it in your left hand, and you just sit for a few minutes and just breathe and sort of take in what you heard, and then turn the recorder on, push play, and sit there and listen to him talk as if he were your best friend or your brother or you know, somebody that you love unconditionally. Just, you know, you're just listening to this guy, and feeling as best you can what it's, what he feels like, what it's like to be him. Mm-hmm. And then once you turn it off, turn the thing off, and just sit with that experience. And then when you feel ready to express what you would like to express to this fellow who is your brother or your best friend or whoever who's struggling in this situation, turn on the recorder and let that that compassion, that kindness, that understanding, talk.
Okay.
Okay? Now, my encouragement is to do this with some regularity, at least once a day, okay? Because as he expresses these things, more is going to come up, more is going to come up, more is going to come up, and he'll have more to say, and you'll be more in touch with him. So let him talk. And you listen, and then let that loving kindness and wisdom come out and speak to him.
Okay.
All right?
All right. I can do that.
Good. And then you'll let me know.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
All right.
Very good.
Yep. Thank you
Thank
very
you,
much.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
You
Bye.
Are so welcome. Okay. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. and another fabulous conversation and another fabulous show, Sherry. How do we do it?
I know. We're so lucky. It was so good, in fact. Let's do it again.
Okay, next Tuesday.
Not tonight, next week. Yeah, next week, not tonight. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Good night.